This is the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Teachers have been clamoring for doing something about this, but we were all afraid that the parents would object, the students would object. And so now that all these states, 31 states now, are restricting cell phone access during the day, what we're finding is teachers are practically dancing in the hallways.
I can imagine. Welcome in to the Mark Cox Morning Show. It's a Thursday morning. I'm Mark. That's Ethan Bright over there. Kim St. Ange out with her new baby now. If you hadn't heard the breaking news from earlier this week, and everybody's happy and healthy. And, of course, Dan Buck, who's been helping fill in for Kim and will continue to do so, already had some vacation scheduled. So he's off today and tomorrow as well. So it's me, it's Ethan, it's Sue Thomas, and we got you covered today here on the show. I love that story. Can I just tell you that? I have pushed for that for years. And I've got a good friend who's a teacher, and he was telling me that I said, how's it going? I saw him the other night at an event at our daughter's school, and he says, you would be shocked. He goes, I haven't had to make a single office referral yet. And so far, so good. Like, there's not been any kid so far in his public school class that has given him any serious pushback about the ban on phones. I love that they did this statewide. Trying to do this on a district by district basis would have been a nightmare, because you would have had all the parents who were opposed to the idea in there screaming about how dare you take my child's phone away or punish them or whatever. And now it's just state law. From the time the bell rings in the morning until the bell's done the afternoon, no cell phones. They can't use their smartwatch. They can't use any of it. And you know, I don't know how discipline's going to be handled. That'll be an interesting question. I mean, I'm glad it's not up to me, but they refer, instead of, the teachers don't have to do anything, and they don't have to do it immediately. Did you know that, Ethan?
No.
They don't have to, like, say, okay, I saw you get your phone out, go to the office. They just make a referral to the office. So after class, they fill out a referral sheet. I saw Tim Smith with his phone out today, and I warned him about it, and here's his referral. And then later the kids get called into the office, and I don't know what the punishment is.
That's way easier, though.
Or if it's three strikes and you're out, or what happens.
Yeah, I mean, in doing that, you won't disrupt class as much either.
Yeah, you don't just disrupt class as much, and it doesn't put quite as much pressure on the teachers to enforce whatever's going on. You kind of leave that up to the administrators. So anyway, I think it's a great thing. Glad you're with us. We got plenty to get to today. We got Jim Talent coming up. Always love getting him on here on Thursdays. It is Jim Talent Thursday, and we got Linda Ragsdale is going to join me at the bottom of the hour. She's an O'Fallon City Council member who brought a little bit of a controversy to my attention out there. Just, you know, something that she voted against this along with a couple of other members of council, but it went ahead and got approved. And she claims that there's evidence here that there's some conflicts of interest in a project approved by the city of O'Fallon. There, even though it passed, there is still an opportunity to convince a couple of these council members to change their votes. So we'll let Linda explain what's going on out there here at about 7:35 this morning as we try to get you all the national and local and statewide coverage that we can. Speaking of statewide coverage, I'll just mention it again. Tomorrow morning in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to get Catherine Hanaway on here. She's been appointed Attorney General to replace Andrew Bailey. I think that happens September 8th. I think that's the date I heard Governor Kehoe announce the other day. So we'll talk to Catherine. I've known her for years. I've heard the conservative complaints about her being appointed. And, you know, I made these comments to the Annie Fry show yesterday. She said, is she qualified? Well, she's more than qualified. I mean, she's been a U.S. attorney. She's been the Speaker of the House. She knows how to handle the political side of it. She knows how to handle the legal side of it. She's a great legal mind, and she has the strength of her conviction. She's proven that she's pro law enforcement and strong on crime when she was U.S. attorney. That said, she's going to be, I believe, a different kind of attorney general. She's going to kind of break the mold. If you're expecting somebody like an Eric Schmidt or an Andrew Bailey who are very aggressive in pursuing maybe some challenges to, well, the first two were heavily challenging the Biden administration, for example. Obviously, we don't have that problem in Washington right now, but Andrew Bailey was quick to react if there was something at the transgender clinic or a local school or something like that. I don't know that Katherine Hanaway is going to be that kind of attorney general. We'll ask her tomorrow. I mean, that wouldn't reflect how she has served before. So unless something has changed in the preceding years since she last ran for office in 2016, we'll ask her about that. We'll ask her what that means for her. And I'm going to get her on in the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow morning. So be sure and stay tuned for that. All right. Shannon Bream, Griff Jenkins today in today's 8 o'clock hour. Right now, though, I want to get to this morning's top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Calling it, hey, you're spreading disinformation. This center was going and working with different social media companies saying, well, this is disinformation or misinformation. We have to censor these dissenting voices who are being critical of the then Biden administration. So,
I just can't say enough about Tulsi Gabbard so far. And what she's talking about now, because things move a mile a minute, is intelligence sources concerning shutting down dissenting voices in the United States, dissenting voices that had been critical of the Biden administration. She's uncovered some evidence of that. Go Tulsi.
The Republican administration has given us no reason to work with their administration. What they're doing on every single level is immoral and unconstitutional. But let me say right now, this is a moment in time where we have to stand up to this fascist regime.
Oh, yeah. How about that? These folks, this Mom Donnie and all these other folks who claim that they're out there mad at Donald Trump, they're going to stand up to him. That was the DNC chair taking the side of the socialists, claiming that Donald Trump is a fascist. Is it just because he's winning?
People of Washington, D.C. already live with taxation without representation. They don't have full voting members of Congress. But the people of Washington, D.C. deserve statehood, not a police state.
Jim the Acosta, please go away. Jim Acosta, I'm sorry, that guy, no longer the White House correspondent for CNN, but he honestly believes they should have statehood. That the reason the District of Columbia was carved out of two states was to avoid that, Jim.
California and Washington.
Federal officials blaming Democrats, saying their lax policies put lives at risk.
So I don't know if you've heard this or not. I might have picked the wrong bite there, to be honest with you. Let me play this for a second. I'm not sure which bite I have picked here.
Gavin Newsom's DMV gave this individual a commercial driver's license to drive around an 18-wheeler. We know the responsibility that comes with that. And it was pretty shocking, really, that they would be so dismissive of three American lives, three innocents that were lost because of their policies.
Yeah, have you seen that story now? Ron DeSantis was talking about it yesterday, and that is Gavin Newsom has gone on the attack against Donald Trump. He started mimicking him on social media, using all caps in his X messages, and he's hired some young social media guru who's trying to attack Donald Trump on social media. Meantime, his state is handing out commercial driver's license to illegal aliens who failed identifying one out of four road signs in the United States. How did this individual get the CDL and pass the class is what I'd love to know. And why is more not being done about that? These are questions that somebody's got to ask, like Ron DeSantis.
We've got to get tougher on this nationally. You know, one of the frustrations we've had in Florida, we don't recognize illegal alien driver's license from any other state. We don't issue them from our state. We don't recognize any ID cards issued by local governments, NGOs, you name it. We've tried to create an environment that makes it inhospitable for people to want to come illegally and come to Florida. California's done the opposite.
Yes, they have. Thank you, Ron DeSantis. He said, my job's easy. All I do is look at California and New York and Illinois and do just the opposite. And I love that. I really do. All right, quick break here. Jim Talent after the break. Stay tuned.
It is absolutely remarkable what he has accomplished in his short tenure, and he is handing off an office that is in better shape than that office has been in a very long time, and I'm eager to get there.
Catherine Hanaway there, who will be the next Attorney General in the state of Missouri, taking over for Andrew Bailey early next month. And let's get to Jim Talent, please. Former Senator Talent on the line this morning. Jim, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine, Mark.
Good. I know you've known Catherine for probably longer than I have. I probably met her in the early 90s when she was working for Kit Bond.
Yeah, that's about when that's 30 years.
Yep.
She was very, very young in those days. And I wish I could say the same about me. I was a lot younger than I am now. She's a great public servant. Fully qualified for this job. It's really hard to find somebody, you know, who has more qualifications, experience, credentials, ability, you know, proven record of success than Catherine. So she's going to do a great job, and I'm thrilled for Andrew. He's going to get a new challenge, and he's going to be right in the center of events in Washington. So yeah, and Missouri contributing two more good public servants to the nation. I'm proud of the state.
Let me get your take on. Maybe, and I get Catherine on the air tomorrow. I can ask her a couple of these things myself. But somebody, I think Annie Fry asked me yesterday on this, what kind of attorney general is she going to be? And I'm like, well, she's already got the credentials from being a U.S. attorney that she's tough on crime. I'm not worried about that. But I do get the impression that people like Eric Schmidt and then Andrew Bailey after him have kind of changed the expectations for that attorney general's role. They were both very aggressive and quick to jump on local issues like that transgender clinic at Wash U and things like that. Andrew Bailey was very quick to comment and get involved in those. And Catherine's style's always been a little different than that. Would you agree or not?
Well, I think Catherine's style has always been to be very aggressive while being well-prepared in doing whatever job she's been doing, you know, whether that was speaker, U.S. attorney, any of these positions. Now, you're correct that the idea that Josh Hawley and Eric Schmidt, I think, changed the idea or changed a concept or expanded the concept of what the AG's office does. It in addition to all the stuff it's always done, consumer protection, et cetera, it now takes on big, in some cases, national issues on behalf of the interests of the state and the people who live in it. And I think Catherine not only will do that effectively, I think she'll tell you tomorrow, that's one of the things she's looking forward most to doing. And she's an outstanding lawyer. So, I mean, it does take, you have to do the law well. I mean,
yeah.
People, yeah, it's fine to see the issue, to go in, to communicate effectively about it, but you got to have good lawyers and they got to do the law well. And I have full confidence she will. I mean, in both public and private life, she's an outstanding lawyer. She'll hire great people.
Yeah, good. Jim Talent, our guest this morning. So last night, the breaking news overnight was the Texas House finally got its quorum and they voted to approve the redistricting plan down there. I think California is going to do something to try to counter that, it looks like. But what's your feeling now on the odds that Governor Kehoe calls a special session around veto time next month to address this?
You know, I don't know. I've been hearing that this is a real possibility. He may. I think he's probably taking a look. Now, this is not, I'm not talking to him. I do know him, and he's an old friend that was a great supporter of mine when I was running statewide, but I've not spoken to him or any of his staff about it. I think they're probably looking at what's the feasibility that a new map is actually going to change the situation politically. And Mark, I don't know. I mean, I would have said, this is Jim Talent, that a 6-2 map is probably the best we can get in Missouri. But the technology has improved to the point where that may not be the case. So I think he's probably looking at it and saying, okay, is it going to have the practical effect we want it to have? And he'll make that judgment. I think we'll all find out in the next week or two.
Yeah. Is it a percentage issue for you? I mean, is the fairness issue real? If you look at the, map of Illinois, you realize that 46-47% of the vote over there went to Donald Trump in the last election, but there's only 3 Republican congressional districts out of 17. They clearly are depriving quite a few people in Illinois of representation.
Yeah, well, redistricting, Mark, and I did one in 1990. You were referring to how old I was a minute ago. I mean, that was a long time ago. I was one of Catherine's predecessors. I was a Republican leader in Missouri in 1990. There's really no fair in redistricting. Okay, it's an inherently political process. That's what it is. That's what it will always be. And what I don't like about it is when people are holier than thou about it. So the Democrats have been doing this in Illinois and other places, and everybody knows they've been the big gerrymanders around the country. And now they complain because Texas does this. It's a political calculus. You ought to draw maps that respect like county boundaries and the rest of it. And the maps that I've been involved in and the party's been involved in generally have done that. And generally that helps Republicans when you do that. If you stop and think, the Democrats' big reservoirs of votes are in the city. So when they draw a political map, what they're going to do is slice the city up into little slices, and then you've got all these long districts that you can't justify except politically. Mm-hmm. Whereas Republicans' vote is spread a lot more evenly. So it's a lot easier for us to draw favorable maps that also respect county boundaries and the rest of it. I haven't looked at the Texas map that they're passing, so we'll see. But yeah, that's why I say I think the governor's going to make a political judgment. Is the juice worth the squeeze in this? But that's my guess. I really don't have any idea what he's going to do.
That's what we want from you. We appreciate it, Jim. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mark.
Have a good week. We appreciate it. Jim Talent there. Coming up, we're going to talk more about what one congressperson said, one council member says is a conflict of interest out in the O'Fallon government. We'll get to more on that for you with Linda Ragsdale coming up. Well, fresh off the controversy about that data center out in St. Charles, of course, that kind of got tabled because there was a lot of negative reaction to it. Or what, 5,500 people, I think, signed up and complained about that data center, and the policy was withdrawn, at least temporarily. We talked to the mayor about that yesterday. Go back and listen to the podcast if you missed that. There's another incident going on out in O'Fallon, Missouri, and this one's already passed the council. So I've invited Linda Ragsdale, as a council member, to join us this morning to talk a little bit more about it. And Linda, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you today, Mark?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Kind of set this up for us. What's the issue out there that council has already approved? You said it involves a conflict of interest, in your opinion.
Correct. The city of O'Fallon is partnering up with City of St. Charles on what we call CASEL, the Center for Advanced Skills Training in Law Enforcement. It's a police training facility just off Highway 79, where our hope is that law enforcement from around the region will come, and it's kind of a one-stop shop training facility, if you will.
Right.
And this has been a project that predates me being on City Council. They started talking about this project back in 2021. So from 2021 until now, at least 2021, there have been multiple conversations about funding and all kinds of things relating to this training facility. And What I would say is a lot of the things have occurred in closed session without divulging what's been happening in closed session. When we go into closed session, the mayor specifically reads a piece of dialogue that says the reasons that we can go into closed session.
Right.
And some of those reasons include sealed bids, contracts, things like that. So I think it stands to reason, without me needing to disclose anything that may have happened, that it's probably being talked about in closed session. And there in itself would then show that there's some conflict, that it was probably being discussed, and now the lowest bid was by the company of one of our council members who is a vice president of said construction company. And I do want to remind your listeners that our policy is that you're supposed to give the bid to the lowest and the best. Well, the second lowest bid remember, it's a $23.5 million contract. The second lowest bid only came in 0.1964% higher.
$40,000, right? Roughly, did you say?
Correct.
$46,000.
Yeah.
$46,000 difference. So the council member here who had recused himself from this vote, correct?
He recused himself from the vote, but in that same meeting, not before he used his ward report to kind of defend and give a last minute ditch effort as to why they were qualified to have this.
Yeah.
And that in itself, I'm certainly no lawyer, but I have heard from several in the law enforcement community that says he broke some state statutes there by having done that.
Interesting. Well, I don't know. The problem that we have here is that council, you voted against it. What, two other people voted against it? He recused himself, correct. But it still passed, correct, on the overall council
correct.
Vote?
Yes.
And anything else that can be done about that? I mean, have you had any contact with the Attorney General's office? Is there any question about further investigation of it?
I have not been in communications with any enforcement agencies such as that, but I have heard through other constituents and other people that the Attorney General's office is very involved, is very interested in this situation, as is the Missouri Ethics Commission. So I know that this issue is not going away. As far as what can be done in the future, even though we've already taken the vote and unfortunately it did pass, six other people that voted in favor of this contract. If one of those six people would have the courage to stand up and say this was wrong, they could ask for it to be reconsidered at our next council meeting.
When is that?
They could ask for it to be a week from today.
Okay.
And that would bring it back up. We could do another vote. But it takes somebody who voted with the majority to reconsider.
Okay.
And I've only talked to myself, one council member at the time, and 2 days after the vote, and this council member felt even more solidified
in supporting
the vote that he did was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Linda Ragsdale, my guest, council member in O'Fallon, Missouri. So the issue here, just to be clear, is not support for the idea. Everybody supports the idea of building this facility. The question is whether or not a councilman's connection to the construction company is a conflict of interest.
That's correct. And it's more than just, you know, we've had a situation before where there was a Pepsi driver that was also on the council. And when it came time to re-upping the contract that the city had with Pepsi at the time, I guess,
right.
That driver recused himself. But to me, there's a big difference between a delivery driver recusing himself versus a senior executive of the construction company who gains to profit himself, recusing himself, but not before already talking about it from the dais.
All right. So that meeting is coming up next week, correct?
Correct. Next Thursday, City Council, our meeting is at 7:30.
Yeah, and what I learned serving in my brief two terms in Wildwood is that everybody shows up. As a news reporter, we used to always show up to these big controversial meetings where the full City Council was about to vote on something, and it wasn't until I became an elected official till it finally dawned on me that the majority of these decisions are already made before there's an official vote on them, and the politicking has already gone on behind the scenes, and influencing that ultimately at a meeting when a vote's about to take place is highly unlikely. So if you have a strong feeling about this, I guess the point is to reach out to your councilman there in O'Fallon and let them know how you feel.
Correct.
Good. Well,
that's absolutely right.
Yeah. Linda, thank you for bringing this to our attention, and I hope something gets done about it.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to share this. I mean, there have been several things, but it takes something like this to like really grab at the attention of our constituents of what's really happening, and all politics is local.
Yep. Very true. Linda, good talking to you. Thank you.
You too. Have a great day, Mark.
You bet. Linda Ragsdale there out in the city of O'Fallon, Missouri, dealing with that issue. So maybe they get it resolved. At this point, it's already passed. So only unless a vote or two changes between now and next week will that have any impact. So if you agree with Linda, get busy. Start dialing your local council member if you live out there. All right, coming up, do you hear about this situation? Ethan, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but there is a school district in Virginia. So we had a lot of talk about transgender bathrooms and single-use bathrooms. We've had those discussions here in our local school districts in Wentzville and Francis Howe and others. In Virginia, they're pretty liberal in a lot of these districts, and they have a policy that allows women who think they are men to go into the men's bathroom and locker room and vice versa. Well, a couple of young men complained about it, and they're the ones who got suspended. And the you-know-what has hit the fan out there. The lieutenant governor who's running for governor has gotten involved in this now. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that when we come back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the insanity to stop. It is time for everyone to recognize what is settled truth. Girls are girls and boys are boys.
Yeah, seems simple enough, doesn't it? That is the lieutenant governor, the lady running for governor now, Winsome Sears in Virginia. And I've had her on the show before. It's been a while, but when she first got elected lieutenant governor out there a few years back, we had her on the show. Lots of common sense. If I remember correctly, she's an immigrant. I think she was maybe born in like Jamaica, and has run for elected office there in Virginia. Is now the lieutenant governor. Is running for governor. It's a pretty tight race as always. And then this situation pops up in Loudoun County, Virginia, and I'm sure you've heard of this district before because there have been other controversial things that have happened in Loudoun County. But now these three boys who attend Stonebridge High School have gotten in trouble because of their interaction with a woman, a girl, who identifies as a male but still has all the female parts and chooses to use the boys' locker room. You know, as a girl dad, I've always been mostly offended when it's been boys, fully intact men, wanting to use the girls' locker room. But that's not what's going on here in Loudoun County, Virginia. And these boys are in a bit of trouble over this. Listen to the local TV news coverage of it.
And 7 News was the first to tell you about Loudoun County Public Schools suspending two boys who asked why there was a girl in the boys' locker room and expressed their discomfort. Nick Minock is joining us now with what people are saying here, Nick.
Yeah, as you said, 7 News' reporting has been seen hundreds of thousands of times, and the overwhelming reaction to the story is outrage that LCPS would suspend boys for 10 days for saying they are uncomfortable with a biologically female student in the boys' locker room. A handful of others are supportive of LCPS's decision. However, two key decision makers are weighing in as well. The Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the DOJ noticed our story and posted this on X. She said this is very wrong and it will not stand. Virginia Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earle-Sears, who is running for governor, is also weighing in on the boys' punishment and LCPS's bathroom and locker room policies.
Yeah, that he's referring to Harmeet Dillon. Harmeet Dillon is a savage. Can I just tell you that? She pays attention to things going on all over the country. Remember when we covered, and nobody else, to my knowledge to this day, no TV station in St. Louis had the balls to cover it. When a Tesla owner had his car vandalized in Kirkwood, we covered the story, and eventually charges were filed against some pointy-headed liberal from Washington University who thought he had the right to go around and put stickers that said, F Elon on the side of people's cars. He did it repeatedly, apparently. They finally charged him with it because he did it a couple of times. She tweeted about that, and she reached out directly to the gentleman whose car was impacted by it and ask if there was anything she could do. Like, she pays attention to these things. So the fact that this has caught the attention of Harmeet Dillon, and I know it's close to the Washington, D.C. area, so she's probably seen the news coverage there from Loudoun County in Virginia. Listen to the lieutenant governor. This is Winsome Sears talking about what's going on there, and hopefully this is something that helps her in this campaign, because I think most common sense people agree with her that this is a black and white issue.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the insanity to stop. It is time for everyone to recognize what is settled truth. Girls are girls and boys are boys. I cannot believe that we are here today having to talk about these things that everybody understands as plain common sense. Here we are, we're talking about three young boys, who have been punished because they were trying to do the noble thing and saying they were not comfortable having to undress in front of girls. Now, normally we would applaud that. Would we not? And instead, this school system has decided they are going to use the parents' own tax money against them and punish these boys. And so now they are branded, these young men are branded with a label that no parent wants them to have as folks, as boys who have sexually harassed at their own young age. Think about that.
Yeah.
What are we supposed to do now?
Yeah, it's a good point. Again, that's Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears of Virginia with this craziness in the Loudoun, Virginia school district. Just amazing stuff there for sure. And I don't know where it ends. Clearly, you've got the left controlling the district, and you've got a pretty tight race for governor right now. And a lot of people think Winsome Sears is going to lose. I mean, Glenn Youngkin pulled this out last time. I don't know what, if any, role Donald Trump is playing in this election, but maybe he can step in and help out Winsome Sears and try to get her elected. A little bit of common sense in there, for sure. All right, coming up, speaking of which, they did it. Texas has approved redistricting. We're going to talk to Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday, right after the top of the hour. Stay tuned.